White Plains Hospital Health Talk.
Here every day, right here on Westchester Talk Radio.
Hear from medical experts on current health trends and topics in the news.
Welcome back to Westchester Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative. This is Health Talk. I'm Jim Cleefield. For this segment, we're going to focus on the subject of stroke. And with that, we bring in our very next guest. She is Maggie Crilly, registered nurse and coordinator with White Plains Hospital's stroke program. Good to have you, Maggie.
Oh, thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Great to have you with us here today. All right, let's get right into it. Interesting statistic I found. In this country, someone has a stroke every 40 seconds. That is just really staggering. And it's the leading cause of death and also the leading cause of preventable disability. Now, what I want to ask you, Maggie, is what causes stroke, and are certain people more at risk for this than other groups? Explain what that is.
There can be a variety of reasons for someone for having a stroke, and many times people don't know that they have a medical issue until, unfortunately, they have a stroke event. The one thing we want to key in on is prevention, and I will explain what the different strokes are, but prevention is really the way to go about trying to avoid being in this predicament. Healthy lifestyle, all the heart healthy things where you know, keep your weight down, blood pressure down, keep your blood sugar in control, manage all the things that you can. So, you know, being active, no smoking, all those things are very important to maintain a healthy lifestyle and to avoid the risks associated with stroke. Now, there's really two different types of stroke. One could be what's called an ischemic stroke, and that's where there's a blockage in the vessel that prevents blood getting to a certain area of the brain, and that's why you have symptoms. That accounts for about 85% of the strokes people have. The other 15% really is caused by bleeding, and that's either the vessel is weak caused by high blood pressure or some kind of aneurysm or some kind of other issue. And the blood flow leaks out into the brain and doesn't get to areas of the brain that need it, and therefore, you know, that's another reason why you have symptoms. So depending on the area of the brain, the size of the injury depends on how severe the symptoms can be.
So, like, when we talk about controllable versus uncontrollable, if you can just explain the two differences when it comes to preventing stroke or managing stroke, explain that a little bit more.
Controllable are things in our environment we can control. We can control our weight by diet and exercise. We can control the blood sugar. Even if you are diabetic, you know, you work with your physician to keep your blood sugar levels kind of in a normal area so they don't go too high or too low. Blood pressure, again, people have blood pressure problems, but through diet, exercise, working with your physician to manage it so it's in one of the normal areas and doesn't get too far out of control. Cholesterol, that's also another diet and exercise, but there's also medications that are available through your physician. So a lot of times, even if you do have some of the risk factors, such as high cholesterol, diabetes, and blood pressure, working with your healthcare provider is really very important to keep those things managed to help prevent a further risk. Now, some of the things we cannot control is who we are. So if our family, you know, has a high risk of stroke, blood pressure, diabetes, that increases your risk of having that issue as well. Age, anybody actually at any age can have a stroke, but the risk does increase as people get older. Females, it seems to be have a higher risk for some reason, not sure why, but they do. And you know, sometimes different ethnic groups have a higher risk than others as well. So those are things we can't control. We just are who we are. But things that we can are the diet, exercise, blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugars.
Well, can you talk to us, Maggie, about a program that is here at White Plains Hospital and its focus on stroke prevention and treatment, that specific program?
Well, we do actually have a stroke program. We've had a stroke program here at White Plains Hospital since 2005. That's in the late 1990s and early 2000 is when the real big push on the stroke education and treatment of stroke came about. And, of course, we want to take care of our community, so we actually, you know, joined in. We were one of the first hospitals in Westchester to become a stroke center. And what we do is we follow the guidelines on the treatment of patients. There are guidelines that have been established. They're all evidence-based practices. That means that through studies, they have found these are the things that actually improve patient outcome. So we really follow those guidelines set forth by the Department of Health, the American Heart, and American Stroke Association. We also actually go out into the community. We've gone to health fairs, you know, just speaking in general to talk about stroke and stroke prevention. Churches, anywhere people want us to go, we go out and actually provide the education. We've done series at libraries, at the community centers. So, you know, we're more than happy to go out and talk to any organization or various groups if they want to learn about stroke and stroke prevention.
Now, when it comes to detecting and responding to a stroke, I want to ask you about the acronym FAST. That's F-A-S-T. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more for us?
Yes, FAST is actually widely known. So F-A-S-T. F stands for your face. Usually you look at someone, if you're looking in the mirror or you're looking at someone, someone's looking at you, and you notice that maybe, you know, your face is changed. Maybe your lip is droopy, your cheek is droopy, your eyes droopy, so your face doesn't look normal on both sides. It stands for arm, and that, you know, means that if you ask someone to hold their arms out and they can't hold one arm up or one arm doesn't rise, that there may be an issue. S is for speech, and you don't have to visualize anyone for that one. I mean, you could be talking to someone on the phone and realize that they don't sound right. So it could be any one of the three, that predicts symptoms. So T is also time. Time is really of the essence with stroke. The quicker you can treat a stroke, the hopefully you decrease the disability. And now with this medication, when I first started nursing, there was no medicine to give for a stroke, but now there is, and it actually has some good results. So the medicine can only be given, the big clotbuster can only be given within the first really 3 to 4.5 hours. And after that, it's found not to be effective or increases the risk of bleeding. So that's why time is very important to seek medical treatment. We tell everyone, call 911, go to a hospital, because that's the only place you can get the treatment. Urgent cares can't do it. Physician's office can't do it. So any question that there may be some kind of neurological stroke event going on, you seek medical treatment at a hospital, any hospital, because, well, we'd like you to come to White Plains, but any hospital, because they all have pretty much the same standard. It's a national standard and an international standard. So if you happen to be traveling, the hospitals all have the same kind of standard for the care of stroke.
Well, for the 12th consecutive year, Maggie, the hospital, I understand, has been recognized with the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association's Get With The Guidelines Stroke Gold Plus Quality Achievement Award. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
Can you talk to us more about that and what it means to those patients?
What it means is what I referred to earlier is that the American Heart, American Stroke Association has come up with guidelines for the treatment of patients with stroke, both pre-hospital, in-hospital, and post-care. And these are all the things that we monitor on these patients when they come into us. So we work very hard. We take a look at our charts. Myself and my colleague, we go out and we visit with the patients, talk with the families, and we want to make sure that we're meeting those standards. And if we're not meeting them, we take a look at why and, you know, what kind of education does the staff need to provide, you know, this kind of care. So it's all evidence-based that they have found different things are very helpful in the treatment and prevention of stroke. And we monitor to make sure that we are meeting these guidelines. There's about 12 or 13 guidelines, and we review them on every patient that comes through our door.
Well, Maggie, it's great information, and we appreciate you joining us for this segment. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Maggie Crilly, again, she's a registered nurse and coordinator with White Plains Hospital Stroke Program. My name is Jim Cleefield. Just this reminder, this is Westchester Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative, and this is Health Talk.
Aikido is a physical martial art, and the arthritis was just causing more pain and more immobility. After years of suffering with debilitating knee pain, Neil, an Aikido instructor, decided to see Dr. Daniel Markowitz, a joint replacement specialist at White Plains Hospital.
So Neil had bad knees for a good number of years, probably some of the worst arthritic knees I'd ever seen.
The pain was substantial enough that I had to consider double knee replacement.
The outcome was great. Neil was young, he was healthy. I thought he was a perfect candidate.
I found their quality of care equal to or superior to what I experienced in Manhattan in the past. I'm able to practice and teach Aikido again. It was one of the best decisions I've ever made.
A double joint replacement became Neil's best defense against pain. White Plains Hospital. Exceptional. Every day. Find your joint relief. Call 914-849-MYMD. That's 914-849-MYMD. A member of the Montefiore Health System.
You're listening to White Plains Hospital Health Talk right here on Westchester Talk Radio.
White Plains Hospital. Exceptional every day.
Welcome back to Westchester Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative. This is Health Talk. I'm Jim Cleefield with you. For our final segment today, we're going to concentrate on the subject of genetic counseling. And with that, we bring in our final guest, Sarah Bienenfeld, and she's a certified genetic counselor here with the hospital's Center for Cancer Care. Sarah, good to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us here today. Or let's get into the subject. You are a genetic counselor. So for our audience, what are genetic counselors? What do they do?
So genetic counselors are individuals who have master's degrees in human genetics and genetic counseling. We specialize in learning about genetics and the psychosocial effects of anything having to do with anything genetic. So you can specialize in lots of different things, and the thing that I specialize in is cancer specifically.
And so when it comes to that, as far as a genetic counseling session, when a patient comes to you, what actually happens during the course of that session?
So a few things. First and foremost, we take the patient's medical and family history. We talk in detail if they've ever been diagnosed with cancer, if any family member has been diagnosed, the ages of diagnosis, the specific types of cancer, things like that. Then we talk a little bit about cancer and genetics. What is genetic risk for cancer? How is it passed down throughout families? What are the common hereditary causes for cancer? And then we talk about the specific testing options for that individual person, what the risks are, the benefits of doing this type of testing, the limitations in the genetic testing. Insurance is a big topic that we talk about as well, coverage for testing, and the implications of results, how that impacts that person, their own history, their own medical care, their family, things like that.
Well, we'll get into insurance a little bit later. But when we say genetically testing, I mean somebody who's predisposed to something, right? That's what that's
correct.
All about, right?
Yes. So there's a hereditary cause for cancer in the family.
Yeah, family history, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that being said, who in particular should have genetic counseling and possible testing? Who would be a candidate for that?
So anybody who has a personal history of cancer that's diagnosed under the age of 50, or anybody in the family that has a cancer diagnosis under the age of 50, people who have multiple family members with related types of cancer, such as breast and ovarian or colon and uterine, rare cancers in a family, like male breast cancer is pretty rare. And that's pretty much the big reasons why we have people come in for genetic counseling. Also, there are some people that are just concerned in general. Genetic counseling doesn't necessarily mean that the person has to pursue testing, but it's always worth the conversation to come in and to talk about what they're concerned about.
So even if you know you don't have a history, if you're concerned and you want to come for counseling, you could still do that?
Correct. Usually there's some sort of cancer within the family to have it. But people can come in just to talk to us about the options of genetic testing.
Now, when it comes to the issue of eligibility for genetic testing, who specifically would be eligible for something like that?
Most of the time, there is a very wide variety of eligibility. There are some guidelines that we go by. Not everybody necessarily fits into this. Genetic testing has become increasingly popular, so people are more concerned about it. So not everybody necessarily fits into a mold of who should come in and who shouldn't come in. A concern is a reason to come in.
Yeah, and that depends on the individual, right?
Correct. It depends on the individual. We individualize every session to every person. Every test is individualized, things like that.
Now, you touched a little bit on insurance. I want to get into that as my very next question. Does insurance cover that testing in any way, and if so, how?
So in terms of insurance, there's two costs associated with the whole process. The first is for the consultation, and the second is for the actual genetic testing. In terms of the consultation, most insurance companies cover the cost of it. We we do pre-certification here at the hospital, and we try and minimize anybody's out-of-pocket cost. In terms of the testing, that really depends on the specific type of insurance and the specific test that's being pursued, which is why it's such a big part of the counseling conversation as to which test to pursue based on the insurance and the indication.
And would that include something, let's say, if somebody is on Medicaid or Medicare?
Correct. There are some places that will take those insurances. Some insurance companies, like Medicare, have very specific guidelines as to who would qualify and who wouldn't qualify, and we take that into account.
Now, what would you tell those interested in trying the at-home genetic testing? We've heard a lot about that. What about that issue?
So the FDA recently approved some at-home genetic testing specifically for inherited cancer syndromes for three mutations within the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes. It's very specific, though, for those mutations are within the Ashkenazi Jewish or Eastern European Jewish population. So it's a very specialized test. So individuals who are considering these types of testing, we recommend that they actually reach out to their healthcare provider to see maybe they would qualify for further, more comprehensive testing that wouldn't be included on the at-home test.
And one final question I have for you for this segment. So you receive positive results. If that's the case, then what's the next step?
Well, again, we think it's important to talk to their healthcare provider, such as a genetic counselor or an oncologist, as to what the next steps are. Somebody having a genetic predisposition for cancer does not necessarily mean that they're going to get cancer. So we would review with the individual the proper screening recommendations and what the guidelines are as to help them prevent them from ever getting cancer in the first place.
Yeah, so if you get that positive result, you have to take some action on that, right?
Correct. They're certainly actionable, and there are steps that can be taken, like increased surveillance for whatever cancer that gene is associated with.
Well, Sarah Bienenfeld, we appreciate you joining us, and thanks for enlightening our audience about the subject of genetic counseling. Hopefully, people found this helpful.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so, too.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Sarah Bienenfeld, she's a certified genetic counselor here at the White Plains Hospital Center for Cancer Care. And again, a reminder, this is Westchester Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative. I'm Jim Cleafield. This has been Health Talk.
Shark Creative.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola, Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course, production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends. Bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better. Shark.